Good afternoon. We will start this work session of the North Dakota Public Service Commission on case number PU-17-120, Northern States Power Company's advanced determination of prudence on 1,550 megawatts of wind portfolio. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, and Commissioner Brian Crosius and Commissioner Julie Fedorchek are also with me at the table, so we have a quorum, and Mr. Jerry Lean, our advisory staff, is here, as well as Steve Call on the electronics, and several members from advocacy staff are in the room. And I don't really have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchek, do you?
I do not.
Turn it over to you then, Brian.
All right. Thank you, Randy. Is this picking up okay, Steve? Okay, good. All right. Well, it's a sizable project, and just trying to get my arms around the various projects in the various states. And Jerry, do you have any opening comments, or just do you want to just dive into it, or?
I think we can just kind of dive in. I guess I could, you know, like talk a little bit about what the projects are. If anybody's got questions.
Well, I'm just curious. Do we have? I mean, there's a settlement agreement, and we had the hearing on the settlement agreement. I didn't hear any real big outstanding questions during the hearing from either of you, so I'm curious where you guys are on this.
Well, I have some concerns, and whenever you're ready, as portfolio holder, I can kind of lay them out.
Yeah, why don't you?
And maybe that's the only thing that's to be determined is my issues. So I guess one qualifier, there is the rebuttable presumption on the North Dakota cases. However, they chose to evaluate the projects as one portfolio. So that was their decision. They didn't bring it in seven portfolios. They didn't bring it in two portfolios. They brought it in one. And so that's not weighing very heavily on my mind, to be honest with you, because most of this is not. So beyond that little qualifier, I guess I am wondering, I'm not persuaded yet at this point why we should grant the ADP. A lot of things that we do here with regulated entities, we're representing people across the state, and there's a give and a take. We grant a siting authority for something, maybe someone is disrupted, but some product is transported more safely now or more efficiently now. We do a rate case, and we, in many cases, increase somebody's rates. But in return, we have studied the case and found that that's going to make sure that there's a provider there that's able to provide the services that people expect and deserve and that sort of thing. There's just some give and take. In this case, I'm not sure what providing an advanced determination gives to North Dakota citizens or Xcel's customers. It seems pretty clear to me that this is going to be built regardless. Maybe it'll turn out to be a good case, a good package that will provide good benefits. But the company is choosing to move forward very suddenly and very quickly. And to me, that responsibility or gamble is part of that quick about face in their planning. And I don't know why we would take on the additional responsibility of having granted an advanced determination with nothing really to gain. It's not like they're going to build it because we provided that advance determination. I looked back and refreshed myself a little bit on their IRP from 2016. So we're not talking one that's 4 or 5 years old. And they laid out, you know, a fairly similar amount of wind to this, but a lot of it was in 2025 and 2026. In that IRP, they were looking at 800 megawatts by 2020. And it almost seems to me that then when Minnesota said that they're going to have more than that by 2020, suddenly we have this about face. And I tell you what this reminds me of, and I just keep coming back to it. It seems like the inexperienced shopper in the big box store that sees the favorite cereal on sale as a price leader and can't grab enough shopping carts to keep filling up. Just suddenly we need all this additional resources that in 2016 weren't needed for almost a decade yet. And so, like I say, these might turn out to be good additions. I have a hard time imagining a good scenario or a likely scenario where something else is going to be better, but I don't think it's impossible to imagine. Corporate tax rates be cut to a point where these PTCs, the value isn't what it was even right now or when this package was submitted to us? Could FERC adopt some kind of a new pricing strategy that's been talked about where all of a sudden you can't afford not to run the nuclear plants now and all these new wind farms sit idle by? Could we get to the end of 2019 and Congress says, no, we need construction jobs, we're going to up that PTC, we got to keep building more, and then all of a sudden it's the new farms built after these that are the profitable ones and these set idle? I don't know, none of them seem very likely now, but things do change. And like I say, I see no real benefit to our citizens for granting this, and so I'm just not sure why we should get out on the thin ice and do it.
Well, one thing that they do point out on, I've got to go back to the top, on the application itself, is that they do not anticipate a load serving need to arise until the mid-2020s. After the wind portfolio will be fully in service. So, you know, they're about 8 years out from actually having the need. But I think you're right. I think they have a goal that they have to meet. In Minnesota, I believe it's 30% by 2025. Everyone else is 25%, but I think Xcel had a 5% higher goal, so that's probably driving it. The other thing that is interesting with the new proposed tax bill, tax plan, that I believe it's Section 3501, where the proposal is that the PTC moves from $24 a megawatt to $15 a megawatt. And I believe that would be effective immediately upon passage of the bill, which could certainly change things. That's a significant shift, but who knows what's going to happen at the federal level. That proposal will be modified many times over, but there is definitely uncertainty when it comes to the production tax credit.
I wasn't aware of that, but I guess I just go back to, if in a siting case, if we were talking about foxtail siting, yeah, if we don't site it, it's not going to be built. We have a reason to join them in taking some risk and and making a decision on that project. And if we want it built, it has to be granting them a certificate. But in this case, I'm just not seeing what we're getting for our people by joining them with this advanced determination.
Well, I think that there's a couple things that came out in the settlement agreement that had me thinking about it a little differently than the two of you. And that is that no one was really, no one, I don't think, argued that they need this now. Just like when Thunder Spirit went in, they didn't need Thunder Spirit either, but it displaced higher cost energy, either purchases or use of their own existing fleet that was more expensive. So, you know, the advocacy staff basically said that denying prudency of these projects would only deny substantial long-term cost savings for customers and not stop these projects from being built. And to your point about why provide the prudency determination, I think that the settlement agreement does provide some safeguards for the customers that we would lose if we didn't have the ADP approved, and that is that the company, if they complete the projects under budget, 100% of the savings will flow to customers. That's a settlement agreement term. If the company does not complete these projects within budgets, they'd have to come back before the commission and prove the additional expenditures are prudent. So assuming that we would somehow review this project again, we'd be facing a similar situation with or without the prudence there. And then thirdly, if the projects are not completed on time and do not receive 100% of the PTCs, the company is at risk for those costs. If we don't give them prudence, then that protection doesn't exist for our customers either. So to the point of why provide the prudency, I think those are the reasons, because through the settlement agreement, staff did get some commitments from the company that are protections for our customers if the projects don't develop as they're anticipating. And that would, you know, the last one, if not complete on time, don't receive 100% of the PTCs, I would assume that would apply somehow to the changing tax structure as well. But for sure there's more protections with a prudency determination against the very things you've laid out than there is without it. And so I think those are some pretty compelling reasons. I agree with you that these projects are going to be developed either way, and we will see them back from the company in a rate case. And we'll be asked to have our customers pay for them at some point down the road. It's just whether or not we want to have these added protections that were negotiated in the settlement agreement or not out there for our customers. I don't know, Jerry, do you see it differently? Am I off base with that?
No. One thing I should point out is that load serving needs implies capacity. You don't get capacity, generating capacity from wind, really. You get some pittance of a credit for it, but the value in wind generation is for energy. So capacity is demand. It's how much electricity you can produce instantaneously at any given moment. And energy is that amount of electricity that you're producing times the time that it runs. So that's just make sure we got the difference between energy and capacity. So if you buy a generator, you're going to have a capital cost in that. And then if you're going to run it, you're going to have to pay for gas. So the gas to run it would be considered your energy. And the generator itself would be your capacity payments. So if they're looking at needing more capacity in the mid-2020s, this really isn't going to help that. It's just they're different things. They had some numbers in there that were, you know, pretty high for the savings. And those savings are coming from what you wouldn't have to pay in a fuel cost adjustment for energy. You would have to instead pay an upfront cost for the projects, unless they're purchased on a power purchase agreement, which a couple of these are, in which case it needs to be a reasonable energy price that you're paying. But then you don't have the capacity cost initially. As I've said before, I know that, or I've heard anyway, that NSP and the RTF filing would like to give this project to Minnesota. And Minnesota would sure like to have it, I think. If that happens, I think we pay more.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why they included that in their language.
Included what?
Our wind portfolio can be considered least cost. Da-da-da. And add capacity to the NSP system in anticipation of the mid-2020s need. When it is such a small fractional amount, I guess it does add.
Even though it's small. I think it's like 15% for capacity of what their nameplate is.
And just to clarify, the two points I made about that and then also the potential change in the tax code, I guess I didn't really state how I see the project. I was just pointing those two things out.
If they change the tax code, it seems to me it would have to be going forward. I don't know how they could retract what they've already done.
Right. The way it's worded, 100% of the PTC, they could still get 100%, but if it's 100% of 15 versus 24, I think the 100% they're referring to is in terms of getting it.
15 or 24 what?
$15 a megawatt.
Oh,
versus $24 a megawatt. So they could get 100%, still get 100%, but they're doing it in anticipation of a higher amount.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think the 100% mark that they reference or that's referenced is getting this to qualify for the 2016.
Yeah.
Credit at 100%. So from, I think they're referring more to the timing of this.
So their numbers do assume that they get full PTC credits, but there is a clause in the settlement agreement that says that North Dakota customers won't have to pay more if they somehow or other mess that up and don't get their full production tax credit.
Right.
But if the IRS messed it up, then...
It didn't say who messed it up. It said if they don't get it, they're not going to charge us more. But, you know, I mean, when the time comes, see how it goes.
Yeah.
So, Randy, what's your concern with this? Is it just adding this much more wind on the system?
Well, that we're just taking a whole lot of risk for projects that I don't think are thought out very well necessarily, because only in 2016 they were a decade away yet.
But what's the risk when the price is just lower? It's just displacing other energy. I'm not following what the risk is.
Well, I'm not sure how that's going to go if the IRS changes something, you know, whether that's going to be a factor in that or not. I named a couple others, and they sound absurd, but lots of things, once they become normal, they don't seem absurd anymore, but shortly before they were invented, that would have seemed absurd. But, you know, could we have a much higher PTC for projects after 2019 by then in order to spur construction? Then all those new projects are the ones first up on the market, and these are sitting around doing nothing. Or could we have a new pricing structure through FERC where all of a sudden the nuclear is rewarded to such a point where you can't afford to leave that not running at less than full strength, and that even with the PTCs, these aren't the lowest cost electricity, that maybe someone else can even run bigger negatives. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
those are.
But I had incorrectly said there's no benefit, and you did correct that there are some. Mm-hmm. So now I'm recalculating whether those benefits that you're correct, they're in there. I'd kind of, I guess, put them out of my mind, I guess, mm-hmm. Since the hearing, whether those outweigh the responsibility that we're. The risk that I feel we're taking by approving this on projects that I'm quite certain are going to be built whether we join the risk or not.
Well, the other big benefit that I didn't list there is the $85 million in savings for North Dakota customers. I mean, I don't know how we look ratepayers in the eye and say we didn't determine that prudent. And those are based on, you know, market prices today. That you can compare it to what is being purchased and sold in the market. So, I mean, could that savings be more in the future? It could be. It could also be less. It's a pretty substantial amount. I guess I'd take the $85 million, especially with some of the protections that are in place that... hedge should something change and protect the customers from increases that could reduce those savings. I mean, I share the concern of the flooding of wind on the market, but this is, you know, this, it's what's happening. I think it's the evolution that's taking place, and it's happening, I think, without a lot of big... concerns on the reliability side. I mean, we have the concerns, but they aren't being materialized in a real way. So I think that it's a pretty compelling portfolio of projects for reducing the costs of electricity for longer term for customers.
Do we know, Jerry, without doing it, releasing anything that's trade secret protected, but do we know the company's plans as far as how the PTCs are going to be appropriated? Are those going to all be used as they come in to what are, I suppose, on average 25-year projects to keep the rates disproportionately low for the first 10 years while they're coming in, and then just see once what happens when we get to the last 15 years? Or are those going to be prorated out for the length of the time that these generate?
You know, I don't know all of the details. I would expect that there may be differences between the projects. you know, as it goes with, is it a levelized cost over all these years? In their own projects, like we heard the other day, who was that in here, Otter Tail?
Otter Tail,
that they run them right back to the consumers through the renewable rider. And I don't really have the whole answer on what NSP is going to do in this. You know, staff had a consultant look at it and probably could get the answer there.
It's another thing that I find, and maybe it goes beyond whether this merits an advanced determination of prudence or not, but when we play these kind of numbers games and keep the prices disproportionately low for the first few years, and then knowing that those things are going to need to be used in order to be justifiable for much longer than that, that's really bothering me too, but maybe it doesn't really have so much to do with this decision necessarily.
There are quite I don't have the dollar amount, but you know, for example, a project that is 5 years old, if the company decided to apply the PTCs for the first 10 years and then it would fall off. And I think that was one of the explanations that was given, with a different case, that some of this is already baked in. They fall off. Some come back on. The new ones are introduced through projects like this. So it's hard to get your arms around on a per-company basis. Okay, how many are baked in, if you will, right now already? When do they expire? And then the new wave comes on. I think it's pretty detailed and probably fairly complicated in terms of just seeing, because they all, I think I've heard it both ways. Some, well, it's the first 10 years, and when they fall off, then they fall off. And others are averaging them out for a longer period of time. Some have more early wind, if you will, that the PTC is flowing through now. Others are bringing wind online, getting new PTCs. Jerry,
it all doesn't fall off at once.
Jerry, have you done the math on these? Because it's a complicated calculation, but it exists.
The other thing you need to take into consideration with that is depreciation. Right. So after, you know, depending on how long you're depreciating the asset over, 5 years is probably a quarter of it anyway. And so your book value is down in 10 years. That the production tax credit runs quite a bit, and so as you write down the asset value, the depreciation being paid on it would go away.
So, and then you don't have a fuel cost, so there's really not a lot of expense. That's the theory with the wind, that there isn't a lot of expense once they're depreciated, right? Because there's no fuel cost. I mean, they might have to repower them, et cetera, but
with you know, like creative financing, I would think that you could use the production tax credit to run those first 10 years and do your financing in such a way that it could be paid for by the in the 10-year period. But you know, I mean, we don't do it that way. We have stretch the depreciation over the life of the assets so that the ratepayers pay for the part they're using.
Randy, you make a fair point, though. What is the long-term economic impact to ratepayers?
And, the companies that, I don't want to sum them up, some people that would argue that you need to move forward on this because the PTCs are expiring and after 2019 it's all gone, and are then coming in and saying, well, but there'll be new ones coming on then, and then those customers will get those PTCs. Well, we don't know that.
No,
none of these things are predictable very far out, and as we're seeing right now with the tax code stuff and the FERC stuff, we don't even know what's predictable till the end of this year.
It is fair to point out that the tax code as it's proposed right now is going to be modified, and it's virtually a guarantee that there will be a lot of negotiations, a lot of horse trading, for lack of a better term, that will occur. So does it go from 24 to 15? Does it move at all? Does that become a point of concession? I could not even begin to predict. But it's part of the proposal, which creates a level of uncertainty. So the language is very important, that the ratepayer is protected if it does change.
So let me ask you this, Jerry. Not giving an advanced determination of prudence does not mean that you're saying it's not prudent. It doesn't mean that you're saying you're denying rate recovery. It says that you're not giving an advanced determination of that. So let's look at these optimistically and say that they fully qualify for the PTCs as they are now. Nothing big changes on other areas that would cause something else to be even better than later, and these turn out to have been wonderful benefits. Why would we think that North Dakota consumers won't benefit from that in the same way North Dakota consumers have benefited from the nuclear plant, and that Minnesota and North Dakota consumers are benefiting from Courtney, and, just as it's always been.
Yeah, I think if you don't give it an ADP, that I don't see a loss to it, to not giving it to them, other than not supporting it, not supporting them on it. And then if it does become an issue in the RTF, they would throw that back, that, well, you didn't give us the ADP on it. I don't know if that means anything or not, when we're kind of doing uncharted territory with that RTF.
But not granting an ADP doesn't mean that our customers are not going to be getting electricity from these facilities, does it?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen with the RTF.
Well, unless we do something that
they talked about
on that, that
they talked about assigning some things to each state, and those would be your assets that you get power from. And if that were to turn out to be the case, they would want to give these to Minnesota, I think.
Wouldn't they want that if we made the big change with the RTF? Wouldn't they want that, whether we had granted ADP or not?
You know, I can't really say what's going to happen with the RTF. I mean, there would be some kind of a determination as to who gets what if you're separating the things apart. We would, at that point, be able to argue that we want the wind, or we want part of it. But, I personally am not a real fan of the RTF and separating the companies, so I don't know.
Well, we can't get into that case right now.
Yeah.
So we would lose the terms of the settlement agreement if we don't approve it. So yeah, those customer would protections would be gone. So that would be one compelling reason for approving the ADP. And what do you gain by not approving it? What's the advantage of not approving it?
If, for some of the examples that I gave, things go badly on these projects, they still need to come into us for rate recovery on them, as opposed to having granted it and we've already mm-hmm. told them it's going to be fine. That would be the advantage.
I think we've told
so
them
we'd
that
have to
it's
deny.
Prudent, not that everything's fine. And then we got numbers in the settlement agreement that if they go over that, they have to come and apply for further recovery if they want it.
I don't know. I guess if you're looking at what's more likely, that what are the more likely scenarios and how this is going to play out, is it more or less likely that the estimated $85 million in savings is going to be real or that one of these other scenarios is going to play out? That you're going to end up costing it somehow, not only realizing those savings, but costing customers more. That would be, you know, the reason to wait and then let them come back to us and prove that they are a good deal when it comes time to put them into the rate base. Versus saying, yeah, this looks like we like the terms of the settlement, the added protections for the customers, and this looks like it's low-cost power. We should grab it.
Again, though, if the $85 million or some other sum close to that materializes, I'm not seeing where our customers have lost the benefits of that.
You haven't, except for you've lost the protections of the settlement agreement.
Yes.
And whatever, I mean, I don't think any of us have a sense of how this RTF is going to play out. I can't fathom it in my mind, but, you know, that's out there as well as another X factor.
The idea that you shouldn't grant an ADP, is present in every ADP case.
Right.
What's the reason for it? You're taking the risk away from them.
I don't know that we're going to see very many ADP cases. I hope not. Where the year before someone came in and did an IRP that was just so dramatically different before being ordered by another state to do something different and then just coming back and now night is day and day is night and it's we're going a whole different... I guess it's not as dramatic as I just made it sound to be. It's a lot of the same stuff, but at a whole different pace of getting there, you know, in a few years instead of a decade.
Well, it seems like it's all different by price, though, just because the prices came in lower. So yeah. That seems like why that was their rationale for adding more.
I think they felt it was too good a deal to pass up.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that it goes away, you'll never get another shot at it.
Yep, or it could be, like Randy said, could be better deals around the corner, but that's the nature of being in any marketplace.
Yep, exactly right.
Well, Brian, I don't have any more to weigh or ask about. I don't know if you guys do.
I don't really either. I got to go through those settlement points again more and give that more consideration, but I'm still not sure what direction to go on this.
I guess I could say I'm available if you need anything.
Okay. I don't have anything else either.
Okay. We are concluded.